Jeff Mackler. I'm a co-coordinator of the Northern California-based mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and also a coordinator of Mumia's national political defense.
So I guess we might as well move right into an update on the situation because it is quite crucial what the recent developments are. I understand that Mumia is going to court on the 17th. Can you talk about what led up to that and why he's going to be in court?
Well, his new attorneys, Marlene Kamish and Elliot Grossman, prepared and submitted to Judge Demby, who is in charge of the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas. It's essentially the lowest level of the state court, the court that tried Mumia in 1981 that was presided over by Judge Sabo, who has been retired. They submitted a 275-page brief on May 5th, and the brief essentially alleges that Arnold Beverly, as opposed to Mumia Abu-Jamal, was the killer of police officer Faulkner on December 9th, 1981. Beverly has signed an affidavit and submitted it to the court, as well as the federal district court, saying that he was the killer. And he describes the details of the events that unfolded on that night. There were four other affidavits submitted. The second was by Billy's brother, William Cook, who for the first time stated that he was not only on the murder scene, but that his business partner, Kenneth Freeman, had told him that he was the second killer of police officer Faulkner that evening. The third witness was Lynn Washington, who was not on the scene, but was a reporter on Philadelphia's daily newspaper called the Daily News, and he said that he appeared on the murder scene several hours later as an investigative reporter, and to his shock, the entire scene was unprotected. He was able to go inside Billy Cook's car, for example, from where the murder, one of the murderers alighted after shooting Faulkner. There was nothing to preserve a murder scene of a police officer, which was extremely unusual at the time. The fourth was an affidavit from Donald Hersing. Donald Hersing was a confidential security investigator in the pay of the FBI at the time of the murder, whose job was to collaborate with the FBI in making payoffs and otherwise finding out about illegal Philadelphia police activity in the area in regard to drugs and prostitution and other illegal activities that the Philadelphia Police Department was involved in. The department was subsequently a number of its members were subsequently indicted and convicted of these crimes. One of them, of the convicted people, was Alfonso Giordano, who was in charge of the crime scene when the murder took place and on the scene. In fact, it was Giordano who accompanied Mumia to the hospital, who Mumia was wounded at the time, and who wrote an affidavit saying that Mumia, on the way to the hospital, confessed to him. Giordano's testimony was never introduced into Mumia's trial because he was subsequently indicted and convicted of his involvement in organized crime, prostitution, ground gambling, and so on, and the prosecution didn't feel that he would be a credible witness against Mumia. But Hersing's affidavit cites Giordano as one of the police officers whom he was working with as an undercover representative of the FBI. And he also named a number of other people who were in collusion with the police, including the person who was the chief eyewitness against Mumia, Cynthia White, who was paying off corrupt policemen in order to continue her prostitution work at the scene. And the last affidavit was by Mumia himself, who for the first time writes down exactly what he did on that fateful night. A combination of all these affidavits and an incredible amount of research into the original trial of Billy Cook for assault on police officer Faulkner. Cook was on the scene. The testimony of several eyewitnesses that was made on the scene as opposed to the court testimony that was fundamentally changed to coincide with the police version of what happened make an incredibly clear case, in my opinion, that Mumia was not the murderer. So all of this information is being presented before Judge Demby at 9 o'clock in the morning in Philadelphia on August 17th. There'll be people from all over the country and all over the world coming. Representatives of the European Parliament and Japanese Diet will be in the courtroom along with prominent people in public life like Ossie Davis and Sonia Sanchez.
What state court is this? Is this the Pennsylvania Supreme Court?
Mia has filed for a second post-conviction relief act hearing. This is a provision, he's applying under a provision of Pennsylvania law, which allows you to go back again into court at the state level, even though he has lost all of his court proceedings in at the state level, if you find new evidence proving your innocence. The federal courts are not the place to present such evidence. But on the way to the state court, after Mumia filed his 275-page brief, a few days later, his attorney submitted a request to the federal judge who is presiding over Mumia's case in the federal district court, William H. Yon. And Mumia essentially had one request of Justice Yon. He asked him to order the deposition, or to order that the state courts take a written deposition from Arnold Beverly. They wanted to bring Beverly into the courtroom, or in before the prosecution, not even a courtroom, and have him answer any questions and take a written deposition.
That is the man who said he actually killed Daniel Faulkner, Beverly.
That's right. In other words, Mumia said, bring Beverly to the prosecution and let's have a taped interview, record everything he says, reduce it to writing, ask him any questions you want in preparation for our request for a new state post-conviction relief act hearing. The prosecution initially refused to depose Beverly, which is an extremely unusual situation. Here you have a man who said that I, as opposed to Mumia, was the killer. I was on the scene. I was accompanied by another person. I want to say what happened. And you have a prosecution that would prefer to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal than hear from a person who says that he, not Mumia, was the killer.
So you're telling me that Arnold Beverly is willing to testify in court that he killed Officer Daniel Faulkner?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm telling you.
And you're telling me?
In the 275-page brief, they list as a witness, in addition to several others, Arnold Beverly. They are prepared to bring in Beverly. The prosecution refuses to hear from Beverly, saying that they don't believe his testimony and saying that it is beyond the statutory time limit of 1 year. Beverly's affidavit was initially written in 1999, and Philadelphia has a law that says that if it's more than 1 year late, it's barred.
So basically what we have is now we have someone who is confessing to killing Daniel Faulkner that's willing to testify on top of all of the other evidence that demonstrates that Mumia is innocent, and the state court is going to be asked to look at this new evidence.
That's right.
And what do you think the likelihood is of a state court in Pennsylvania agreeing to look at evidence of innocence in Mumia Abu-Jamal's case?
That's a great question. Let me give you a little bit of background to it so you see the setting that this is going to take place in. That is on the 17th. As I said earlier, Mumia has asked, because the state refuses to take a deposition to Beverly before any trial or investigation or whatever, before our new hearing, they went to the federal court and asked Judge Yon to order the state court to take a deposition. And Yon, in a 12-page decision on July 19th, refused to do so. And he cited several cases that have gone down in the annals of American law as perhaps the worst aspect of our so-called criminal justice system. The first was the 1993 Herrera decision, in which then Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Rehnquist, ruled that federal courts are not the place to litigate facts and that innocence is no defense. In other words, the only role for federal courts, said Yon, quoting Rehnquist, was to litigate whether or not constitutional issues were involved in Mumia's case, whether or not there were constitutional violations in the course of his trial. Innocence is no defense is the central core of the Herrera decision.
Can we talk just a little bit more about that, since federal Judge Yon refused to look at the new evidence partly based on the Herrera court case? Herrera had strong evidence that he was innocent, correct?
That's right.
And what happened in his case?
The Supreme Court ruled that it was irrelevant, that federal courts did not consider innocence as a defense.
And he was...
I know that sounds preposterous.
Was he on death row?
Your listening audience is going to say, I don't believe this guy. But that is what the Herrera on it, and I quoted not only Herrera, but Yon. Yon goes further.
Herrera was executed, right?
That's right.
Despite the fact that he had strong evidence of innocence.
That's right. In Yon's ruling, he said even if there were credible evidence to the effect that Beverly's confession were true, it would have no bearing on the proceedings. And then he went further. He quoted the Effective Death Penalty Act, which said, I, as a federal judge, in addition to not being allowed to consider facts, I only consider constitutional questions. The determinant of a defendant's innocence or guilt is in the state courts, he said. Federal judges, since Herrera, do not reverse state court proceedings. And then, as an additional proof of that, he cited the 1996 President Clinton-signed Effective Death Penalty Act, wherein that new law states that federal judges are obligated to give a presumption of correctness to the findings of state courts. And following that precedent, Judge John says, I must presume that Judge Szabo's decisions were right. And he said there was no evidence that the key witnesses in his case were intimidated or otherwise abused by the state court, and lacking such evidence, which would constitute a constitutional violation, that is, if the state intervened to falsify evidence, then I'm going to assume that the eyewitness testimony, the four eyewitnesses that allegedly alleged that Mumia was the murderer, that their testimony stands, and that if they had heard Beverly's confession, they would have ignored it.
Basically, what I'm hearing you say is that federal Judge Yon recently ruled against Mumia, against new evidence such as Arnold Beverly's confession that he killed Daniel Faulkner, as well as all of the other new evidence since the original trial that demonstrates, you know, at least suggests innocence and has never been heard in a court. And he also stated that he was going to assume that the state court's finding and upheld the conviction, basically, of Mumia in the original trial.
Well, actually, Judge John did a strange thing. He was only asked to do one thing. We only asked him and the defense. The defense only asked him to do a simple thing. Tell the state court that they have to bring in Beverly and question him. And he said, no, I won't do it. But he took the occasion to essentially issue a 12-page decision which instructs or suggests to the state court judge, Pamela Demby, on Friday, August 18th, what to do. He says, essentially, Judge, if this ever gets back to me, I'm going to throw the Beverly testimony out. Ultimately, you have to decide what to do with it, he says to Judge Demby. But I wouldn't even consider it if I were you, since the testimony itself, in addition to being barred under Herrera and the Effective Death Penalty Act, is barred by statute because it came too late. So if I were you, Judge Demby, I wouldn't even grant a post-conviction relief act hearing.
So Judge John is telling the state courts to rule against Mumia.
On Friday,
despite all of the evidence, the new evidence.
That's right. He's citing the law to rule against Mumia. So let me tell you what I think, you know, some likely scenarios are in this regard. First of all, he says Judge John is simply advisory because his own ruling implies that it's the state judge that has to decide. So the best he can say to the state judge is don't consider Beverly's confession because it's too late. Mumia's going to walk into court and he has the right to be there. A Supreme Court decision a couple of years ago essentially gives people the right to appear even if the proceedings are extremely minor. The hearing is supposed to be a status hearing. That is, the lawyers are out-of-town attorneys, three of them, and they are going to ask the judge for the right to practice in the state of Pennsylvania. That's the opening, because they have not been certified by the courts in Pennsylvania. They're from Chicago and Los Angeles and so on. At that moment, when the hearing begins, the prosecution may say, Your Honor, their 275-page affidavit is irrelevant because the central focus of it, Beverly, is too late under state law. And therefore, you don't even have to entertain the motion to allow these lawyers to practice.
So it doesn't matter if somebody's confessing to killing somebody. It's as long it has to be done before a certain date. They can literally execute somebody on a technicality, even though they're innocent, just because they haven't acted soon enough in the courts.
That's right. So the judge could say, you're right, the statutory limitation bars the Beverly confession. There's no need to proceed any further. This hearing is ended. I don't have to deal with your request to practice before me on the basis that you're out of state. That's one variant. That could very well happen.
What happens?
Mumia will be in court at that moment, and his lawyers are going to answer with the following. They're going to say, there are two ways that we can gain status in this hearing. One is we are required to present new evidence. You're arguing that the new evidence is too late. We argue that there's a reason for that, and that is ineffective assistance of counsel. Whereupon the legal team has included some 60, maybe 100 pages in its brief on why Mumia's previous attorneys were operated ineffectively in regard to presenting Beverly's testimony when they had it. That is, they advised Mumia not to produce it for a variety of reasons. And then they will argue that, and they will try to make the case that it was not Mumia's decision, but his counsel's decision to mistake or whatever, or conscious decision to not present the evidence. At that point, Demby, it appears to me, is going to have to at least to listen to the arguments as to why the deadlines were exceeded. No one knows what will happen at that moment. Judge Demby could say, okay, there's enough evidence here to allow me to consider whether or not I will grant a second hearing. I have received 275 pages plus supplementary material from the defense. How much time and material does the prosecution want to take to respond? And then it could be a technical proceeding. The prosecution could say, okay, if you're refusing to throw the thing out now, we want to submit our own 275 pages. We'll do it within 3 months, 6 months, 30 days, or whatever. The defense could turn around and said, we'd like a 100-page rejoinder. They negotiate the times, and the hearing is over.
Okay.
That's the second scenario.
Mm-hmm.
A third scenario is that the judge, having read the brief, is herself convinced, without hearing from the prosecution, that Mumia has made a case for new evidence that proves his innocence and that should be heard, and that the reason why, and also a case for ineffective assistance of counsel, and that the judge simply orders a full new post-conviction relief act hearing and grants Mumia's motion to present 8 witnesses to substantiate his claim.
I have a question. What if Mumia does get a second post-conviction relief act hearing?
Then he will be able to bring in Arnold Beverly to court. He will testify in his own name as to exactly what happened that night.
Who will he be in front of? Will he be in front of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court again?
No, he will be back at square one where he was with Szabo. When Mumia had a 1995 Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing, the same judge that presided over his original trial presided over his state conviction, his state Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing. Judge Szabo. In order to get a new post-conviction relief act hearing, you got to go back to the same court that is the trial court, as if you are starting from square one.
Who is the judge in that court?
Pamela Demby, D-E-M-B-E.
So if she approves a post-conviction relief act hearing, she will be the one presiding over it.
Right.
Okay. Why is it significant that Judge Szabo oversaw the original PCRA hearing in 95?
Well, it happens to be a practice in Pennsylvania that the original judge hears the new evidence. The presumption is that the original judge is neutral and that is most familiar with the case, and therefore is the new evidence. If there is new evidence, that judge who is most familiar with the case should hear it. So Szabo acted in two capacities, as the original trial judge and as the judge in the Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing. In this case, Szabo had the reputation of being a hanging judge because he had sentenced more people, the overwhelming majority blacks, to death row than any sitting judge in the history of the United States. And his record is so replete with judicial error, not to mention prejudicial error, not to mention banning evidence that proved Mumia was innocent, that if upon review the federal courts abide by Sabo's court record, Mumia is a dead man. One of the key aspects that Jan has already, by our previous discussion, said that he, of the case, of Mumia's federal appeal, which is a habeas corpus, brief that he has written, is that the state court record of Judge Sabo was so preposterously bad as to require the court to dismiss it, and therefore to order a complete new evidentiary hearing at the federal level. And Judge John, as I told you earlier, has signaled that he is going to abide by a strict interpretation of the federal procedures under the Effective Death Penalty Act and give Sabo's court decisions credibility.
So the federal judge, Yon, has basically looked back and said that Judge Sabo, who presided over Mumia's original trial and who handed down the death sentence in his trial, federal judge Yon has ruled that he is going to assume that all findings of that court, including Sabo's actions, were correct.
That's the very strong implication of what his 12-page decision was last month. That's tragically. Therefore, Judge John is going to say, okay, I'm going to presume correct everything in the 29-point... I'm going to presume correct everything in the trial. But, he says, he leaves open the possibility that the 29 constitutional points raised in Mumia's federal appeal will be considered. That is, he has not ruled out a decision on his part to the effect that, for example, the fact that 11 black jurors were stricken in a racist manner from Mumia's jury would be a violation of his constitutional rights, which would require a new trial. Or the fact that Mumia himself was denied participation in more than half of his own trial and kept in a locked cell while he was being tried for murder might be a constitutional violation. Or he was denied the co-counsel of his choice, or many other constitutional issues that were raised by the prosecution.
Jeff, what do you think the possibility of Mumia getting justice in the federal and state courts is? He hasn't received
Mumia
it so far.
I think Mumia and his legal team and everybody associated with the case has very little confidence that justice will be done in the abstract in the state or federal courts. We believe in all truth that Mumia's freedom, that justice in Mumia's case rests in our capacity to make his legal lynching too high to pay in regard to a fundamental loss of credibility in the criminal justice system on the part of the American people. Mumia, I went to visit Mumia last month in prison, and we discussed the new briefs and aspects of it. And while he made it very clear that he is totally committed to the affidavits and the view that we've discussed today in regard to Beverly and as opposed to him killing police officer Faulkner in 1981, he said he doesn't believe that the truth in his case will win his freedom alone. The truth will be heard, will be recognized and certified only when we insist that it is, when the price of his killing is too high. Because there have been so many violations of Mumia's democratic rights, not to mention by Sabo, but by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and now by Yon himself, and the vice is closing on Mumia with these reactionary laws, the Herrera decision and the Effective Death Penalty Act that are designed to railroad people to jail. You should understand that previously in American law, federal judges has the right to completely review every single aspect of a trial, and that the presumption in going into federal court was that you were innocent until proven guilty. The presumption of Herrera and the Effective Death Penalty Act is that you're guilty, and that the racist decision of the lower courts prevail. Prior to the Civil Rights Movement, that was the norm in America. Racist Southern courts, racist all-white juries, routinely convicted black people and sent them to die. And it took a massive social movement to win new laws and a new approach to the racism of the South that essentially allowed federal judges to reverse racist state court proceedings. So that's what we're at. We're now in the post-civil rights era today, tragically.
So there's been a regression, basically, partly
been
with
a
the
legal
passing,
regression in
partly
the life.
Partly with the passing of Clinton's the act that he passed, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act in 1996, that you mentioned earlier.
That's right.
As well as, what are some of the other ways that we've regressed?
Well, the Carrera decision also was sort of a prelude to the Effective Death Penalty Act that codified it into federal law and made it even more, if made it even worse. There's a whole series of decisions which essentially want to make state court convictions effective. That's why it was called the Effective Death Penalty Act. And by effective, it means you limit the rights of appeal and you kill the person. That's where we're at in the legal system today. They want to deny people's democratic right to appeal. Big debate over the Effective Death Penalty Act was it was a fundamental encroachment on the right of habeas corpus, the right to appeal your conviction and to reverse the facts when they're proven to be lies. And we're heading in a direction where the state courts and the federal courts are essentially trying to implement the reactionary legislation that they've passed and kill Mumia quickly. So our view is, as with the civil rights movement, where very few Southern judges or federal judges did the right thing. They were pressed to do it by a massive movement that involved billions of people saying, we don't care what your laws are. We don't care about your segregated school laws or your laws that say that blacks can't vote. We're building a social movement to bring them down. And that's what we're doing with Mumia. There are hundreds or scores of things that Judge Yon or any judge could say to grant Mumia a new trial or to free him tomorrow. They could say, my gosh, you mean they unilaterally eliminated 11 blacks and they had procedures in training state prosecutors on why they should eliminate black jurors because they're less likely to convict than white jurors? If you did that, that's not a fair trial. We throw it out. Or they could throw it out on the grounds that the ballistics reports that question the police reports were never shown to the jury. Or that the confession that Mumia allegedly made was proved to be false. Or that the evidence showing from the forensic report that Mumia was innocent was not heard by a jury. The case could be thrown out on any one of a dozen constitutional, scientific, technical, legal, or factual basis. Whether or not the judge in the federal court decides to do that, or Judge Demby in the state court, depends on what kind of social movement we can build. And that's why we are so intent on mobilizing for Mumia now. In San Francisco, on the 17th, we will stand in solidarity with Mumia at a press conference and a giant picket line at Van Ness and McAllister in front of the California State Building.
Is that going to be while he's in court in Philadelphia?
Right. In fact, we will have a cell phone hookup from people in court who will tell us exactly what Judge Demby did as we're in California, because they're later than us. And then on the next day, we'll have a complete report on a mass march and rally in San Francisco, starting at 12 noon, as the Thursday activity does. But we'll be at 12 noon at Powell and Market. We'll have a complete report on the case, and all of the material that demonstrates Mumia's innocence will be presented, and we will then have a march in the city and come back for a final report before we disperse. So at 12 noon on the 18th, Saturday, join us, call the mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal for additional information. We got lots of things to do. If you want to help, our number in San Francisco is 415-695-7745. Get involved, come to our meetings, read the briefs yourself, everything is available, and we need your help to free Mumia and to ensure that justice is done.
That's 415-695-7745?
That's right.
All right. I want to thank you, Jeff, for your time today. I know that you're taking some time out from your family for this, and I really appreciate it.
I am very grateful to be on your show. You're the most thorough interviewer I have ever had. And I'd love to be back and answer additional questions in the days and weeks to come if you'll have me.
I would love to.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you on Saturday the 18th in San Francisco.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.